Hello and welcome to Outside In. I'm John Burns, and today, and my guest today is Victor Saunders, coming all the way from a very snowy Chamonix. He's an author, a climber, and I think he's working as a guide at the moment. We'll find out about that. But we're here to talk about his new book, Structured Chaos: The Unusual Life of a Climber. Most of my life, my climbing life, certainly was chaos. There was very little structure, but maybe we'll talk to Vic about that. Hello, Vic. How are you?
I'm very good. Yeah, it's great. Lovely day here. Actually, it's a lovely night now.
what's the temperature outside where you are then?
It's about -5, dropping to -8 or -9 this evening.
Oh, very nice. I wish it was like that here. Very good. A proper winter temperature. Am I right in thinking that Structured Chaos is your fourth book? Is that right?
Yes, it is. Yeah, actually, it's my third book that's all of my own work.
Right. And
the third book, the first two were written donkeys years ago.
Oh,
and
right.
Then in 2015. A friend of mine, Eric Bowler, who's he's French. He decided to do. It's basically a mashup, you know, like when you get music from two different sources and you put them all together. Eric noticed that Mick Fowler and I had been on some expeditions together, but our descriptions from our books were very, very different.
Right.
And he put together a book which had a couple of new chapters from Mick and I, but he basically put a book together that was a mashup of our experiences on these expeditions. So you get very, very different views. Sometimes you think there's actually two separate expeditions. it's a well-known thing. You put 10 people on an expedition, and when they come back and you listen to them telling about it, you think there's been 10 separate expeditions. Well, it's a little bit like that.
Oh, right. Yes. And yeah.
So that was 2015. I hadn't climbed with Mick since 1987 or something like that. So from 87 to 2015, you know, well, obviously we'd been friends at a distance, but he went his way and I went my way. This brought us together again. Book got put together, and that really, the whole thing got me writing again once more. And this particular volume, we produced this thing in 2015, Mick and I, but with Eric really so collecting it and putting it together, and it did quite well. It won a prize here in France, a book prize. I think it was basically because Mick's writing is, well, I think it's extremely funny. When I read his books, I end up rolling on the ground laughing. It's, you know, I think you know, at his best, Mick's a really great comic writer.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, actually, he did come on Outside In about 2 or 3 months ago, I think, and I interviewed him on here, and we had quite a good laugh, I have to say. So go on. Can I ask you, when did you and Mick first start climbing together then?
I think it's 1977,
but it might be
1978. Yeah.
And where would that have been?
In Scotland. I was in a. we used to meet in this pub. It was North London Mountaineering Club, and we used to meet in this pub. It was called the Globe.
Okay.
Opposite the Globe was the Sobel Sports Centre, and it was one of those very early horizontal bouldering walls along a corridor. It was a corridor wall. It was a copy of, there used to be quite a famous corridor wall at Leeds University. I never saw it, but I heard a lot about it. And there's a lovely story by Alex McIntyre about, it's, I think it's called Brick Edge Boulder, about it, where he's on this, the Leeds wall, and the boulder, and they're talking about what they're doing, and he says he's going off to Annapurna, and the boulder said, oh, where's that, you know, which part of Leeds is there?
I remember those. That's right. I'd forgotten about that actually, because when they began to develop climbing walls, they were. You're right. I'd forgotten. They put them along in corridors, didn't they? And all the holes were concrete. Is that right? Well, I imagine.
Well, this one wasn't. It was the late great Ken Wilson, who actually was the person who'd got the Sobel wall going, and what they used to do in those days, they used to take a brick, a corridor wall which had bricks sticking out, and you'd cut out the old brick and you'd cement in a piece of rock.
Right,
and so you're actually climbing on rock rather than on brick edges.
Yes, I remember.
And all kinds of strange problems were created. So we used to meet at this place. It was the Sobel, and then afterwards there was this quite dingy pub. It was called the Globe, which has now been destroyed. It's been taken down. It lasted quite a long time, and it was one of those places where the floor was, you know, the carpet, there was a carpet floor, but it always felt damp.
Oh, yeah, one of those places where your feet stick to the floor. Yes, I know. But that I think is where climbers should meet, though, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
climbers used to be. Go on, sorry.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's exactly.
Climbers used to be disreputable, basically, didn't they? And
in those days, it wasn't a fashion thing. It was basically, there was about as much fashion in climbing as there was in caving. It was like caving above ground.
Exactly.
You know, people wore gardening clothes to go climbing.
That's right. Go on.
I even remember when the first sticky, everybody had EBs, and I remember when the first really sticky boots came along. Anyway, I met Mick there because I was, you know, drinking my beer, having been to the climbing wall, and I'd been warned. You could see Mick walking around, so I'm looking for partners, and I'd been warned not to climb with him because he only liked ridiculously loose rock and, you know, crumbling cliffs. He had this reputation even then, and I was onto my second pint when he came up, and there's this it's a sort of what do you call it, the anyway, yeah, I had the wrong reaction when he said, you know, I'm looking for somebody to go up to Scotland. I should have said, no way, you know, I've heard all about you. But in fact, because of the effect of beer, I said, what a good idea.
Yes, I think some great climbing expeditions were dreamt up in pubs as a result of too much beer, I think. So
all of mine was started that way. I don't think I've ever been on an expedition that hasn't started with you agreeing to do something when you're, you know, halfway through several beers.
That's right.
And then the next morning you ring up and say, what did I agree to do?
And so were you part of the team that used to take part in these incredible overnight drives up to Scotland?
Well, yeah, that's right. They were all centered around Mick, really, but there was a few of us who were kind of the usual suspects. I remember there was one year, I think it was 1983 to 1984, that winter, or it might have been, anyway, it's the winter of 1983, one end of it. And there were 13 weekends between Christmas and Easter. And we drove up from London to Scotland on 11 of them.
Oof. Is that not absolutely exhausting?
Well, it is for the first couple. It's the first couple, but then you kind of get into the rhythm of it. Oh, there's a few things that we found out how to do it. One thing was that the people driving had to have an estate car. And in those days, the people in the back seat didn't have to have seat belts. So we used to put the back seats down, put the rucksacks down, and a couple of carry mats on top. And so two people would sleep on the back, and then two people would be sitting in the front.
Right, right.
And And then you rotate the driver. So it's a 12-hour drive to Kyle of Loch Alshire, up to Skye, or a little bit less up to Cairngorms. And so the drive used to be somewhere between 8 and 12 hours, depending on exactly where you're going. And a 12-hour drive, if you share it, you get 6 hours lying on your back and 3 hours sitting next to the driver and 3 hours driving on average.
Right.
So it wasn't that bad. And the other thing we found was that you get dressed in London. You don't change when you get there. So you get dressed in London into your climbing clothes.
Right.
And so when you get there at 4 o'clock in the morning, you just get out of the car and start walking. You don't have to get out in the cold and put on different clothes and stuff like that.
Sounds like a different era you're talking about, isn't it? And so more recently with your climbing with Mick, well, the idea for structured chaos, where did that come from then?
It's just a quote from, I wrote this piece at the beginning of the book, just saying basically that my life has been, it's been really guided, it's not guided. It's been directed, or misdirected, if you prefer, by my friends.
That sounds more like it, yeah.
and it's just a piece. If you look at the blurb on the back of the book, it explains it. But it's basically, there's a kind of structure to life, but it's also chaotic. But in the end, it's my climbing is. I mean, I've done lots and lots of climbs on lots of mountains. And at the end of it all, you know, the mountain's fantastic. But at the end of it all, what's important for me wasn't the mountains. It was the people I was climbing with. Mm-hmm. And so these are the friends who, this is really a book about, it's about mountains, but it's not really about climbing. It's really about my friends and how I've kind of fallen into this chaotic life. That's a little bit like Brownian motion, you know, where molecules are knocked about by the other molecules, and there's a kind of drunken man's walk in a kind of a direction. Well, that's how I kind of think about my life.
And what in writing the book, what were the things that really stood out for you? I mean, you were kind of coming back to writing, so that what stood out for you in writing the book?
Well, there was a lot of pieces that I wanted to put together. So my previous books were about expeditions and climbing, and this one really was meant to be a more longitudinal one. So it starts off with how somebody who's very young, you know, it's from my childhood, how you can fall into climbing, and it's really illustrated with. They're all, each chapter is almost a short story. They can, a lot of the chapters can be read on their own, but in the end they kind of add up to a growing up. And
am I right in thinking that you started by climbing on a canal wall? Is that correct?
In London, yes.
In London, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and that led you to Annapurna. Is that right?
Well, no, I never went to. The only thing I've done in Annapurna is heli skiing underneath it.
Right. Sorry,
but,
it was a misunderstanding.
No, I got to do other things, and that was a reference to the late great Alex McIntyre. But yeah, so it leads from climbing and the walls in London with my childhood friends. Climbing in Scotland with other friends, and eventually moving to the Himalayas, climbing there a bit. Then I was trained as an architect, so I worked as an architect all the time. I lived in London.
Yes, okay.
Then I gave up architecture, moved to the Alps, became a mountain guide, did a lot of guiding, and finished the book really in the beginning of 2020 in the COVID times.
Oh, right.
So it's really a reflection on, there's a quote from Colin Kirkus. Do you know Colin Kirkus?
Yeah. You've heard of Colin? I've heard of him. Yes, certainly.
Well, Colin Kirkus was a climber, and in the 1940s, he died in 1942, I think, in a Lancaster bomber.
Oh, right.
He was a rear gunner, and he didn't survive the war. But up to that point, he had made his mark on Welsh rock, and also in the Himalayas. He'd been to the Himalayas in 1935 with Marco Palace. They went to, I think it's a mountain that's now called Bhagirathi, but then it was called Sato Pants. Colin Kirkus said to his mate, Alf Bridges is the guy who wrote the book about the gentle art of falling off.
Oh, yeah, right.
He practiced. Alf Bridges used to practice jumping off from higher and higher and higher until he could jump. He claimed to have jumped from 60 feet and walked away from it. Anyway, he said, Colin Kirkus to Alf Bridges, climbing is about being in the right place at the right time with the right person. What you actually do to get there is rather, largely irrelevant. So I absolutely agree with that. It's
right.
It's really, in a way, the whole of this book is kicked off. It's a kind of homage to Colin Kirkus, if you like.
Right.
And if you read it, it's a climbing book, but on rereading it, I realize I haven't actually written very much about climbing. I've really written about my ridiculous friends.
Well, as you say, I think one of the things about climbing is that as you know, the relationship between two mountaineers or two climbers on a rock face is a very intense and a very unusual thing, really, because very, very rarely in life do you have to rely on someone literally for your life. And there's very few relationships I can think of where two people are so dependent on each other. Do you think that's true?
I do, yeah. My father he did a little bit of climbing in his time, but his big experiences, my father went through the Second World War as a Royal Marine. In the Commandos. And he had also been dropped behind enemy lines in the 40s, in which in the kind of operations that later became special services.
Yes.
Operations. So you'd be dropped behind enemy lines with two or three people, and they would watch an enemy thing, and then they go and break in and steal papers and that sort of thing. And they'd hide out in the woods and try to lie low. And he once said to me that this is the nearest, he absolutely understood alpine climbing, because he said it was a little bit like that. You're with somebody else who you absolutely need there.
Yes, yes.
To stay alive, and they need you. And there's this compact that you have with them that you're only with them because you trust them, and they're only with you because they trust you.
Yes.
And there's a little bit of that in alpinism.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of it in Himalayan climbing, on the small scale, when you're just doing small groups of two people on mountains, which are serious.
So do you think there was something special in the? You must have formed quite a bond with Mick. And yeah, do you think there was something special between you there? Because not my experience certainly is that not all climbing relationships work out, do they?
No, they don't have to. They don't have to work out. The main thing, they have to work out in the climbing arena.
Yeah.
A lot of relationships are really quite professional, if you want to look at it like that. In that they're about trust, respect. But you don't, you even get to like people if you're lucky, but that's not the important thing. The important thing is to trust and respect them. And so it means that you can be really close partners on the climb, but you might not hang around very much, off the climbs in, in, they might not be your everyday friends. I've been very lucky. A lot of my climbing partners are people who I actually like to spend time with outside as well, outside
right.
the climbing arena.
That's not always easy, is it, actually? Well, I think sometimes, how can I put it? A climbing, particularly for climbers who've been through a really intense experience, that sometimes can bond you together, but at other times that can create a kind of tension between you. Have you experienced that?
Not really. I think that the reason that we don't necessarily hang out together if we're not on the mountains is that we have different interests normally.
Okay.
I mean, you don't have to, you know, what I'm saying is you don't actually have to particularly like your climbing partner. I just happen to be lucky that some of my climbing partners have turned out to be good friends as well.
Yeah. And that's really what this book is about then, about, I mean, I think it's what the fascinating thing about mountains really is, I mean, about any mountain is fundamentally a piece of rock. But it's the way that it pushes people into extreme situations, and it pushes people to do things that are perhaps they would otherwise consider beyond almost their capabilities. That really is the fascinating thing about climbing. I don't know if you'd agree with that.
Yeah, I do think that happens, but it's not really the. There's many reasons for climbing. And unfortunately, my main reason for climbing is that agreeing to things in beer and then realizing I can't back out.
Okay, fair enough. Well, that's a fairly honest confession, I think. We're running out of time, unfortunately. So your book, Structured Chaos, that's published by Vertebrate, and that comes out, is it 4th of March that comes out? Is that right?
I don't know.
<You're supposed to. laughs> well, take it from me, 4th of March.
Well, thank you.
So I really look forward to that. Sounds a great book. Sounds a really interesting book. And having talked to Mick, it'd be really interested to see hear the other side of the story, you know. And well, I hope you don't agree to anything else when you've had a couple of beers. You'd think you'd learn your lesson from that, wouldn't you? Okay.
I would hope so. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, John.
Been lovely talking to you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and you. Yeah.
Okay.
Great.
Bye. Well, that was Victor Saunders talking about his book, Structured Chaos. And what I'll do, I'll put a little link to the book on the podcast page. Outside in, my little podcast, we've had a bit of an accolade, I have to say. We're chosen amongst the top 20 podcasts about through hiking by a new website called Feedspot. Now, what Feedspot, I think, intends to do or aims to do is to pull together all the podcasts that you could need it in one site, so they chose us as I think we got in as number 11 on the ranking of podcasts about through hiking, which I'm quite chuffed about, really. I think it's probably, you know, I've interviewed the likes of Chris Townsend, Alex Roddy, and Keith Foskett, who are all probably celebrities of the through hiking fraternity. So thanks very much for that. And again, I'll put a little link to Feedspot on the web page, and if through hiking is your sort of thing, then that's where to go. And also, obviously, if you want to come back through Outside In podcast, you can find Keith and Chris and Alex in my own little podcast. Thanks very much. I hope you've enjoyed the show, and I'll be back soon with more podcasts from the outdoors world inside. Thanks very much. Bye bye.